Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. We'll be with you in just a moment.
Should I talk?
I'll talk.
Good.
This is Dick Paddock, of the co-host of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, The Wake Up Call. And co-host today is Lori Hoyt, as usual, and camera is being operated by Emily O'Hare. And our first guest today, we usually have only one or one group, but today we have a special extra with some announcements, and that is... Our Wilp friend, Miriam Thompson.
I just want to mention that we're waiting for our main guest is Mark Dorison, currently Orange County on the commissioner, and who's a little delayed. And so Miriam is going to tell us some important things that are going to be happening.
Well, it'll very well segue, I think, into Mark's presentation. I went to a meeting last night with students and faculty at UNC Chapel Hill who are organizing a demonstration against the really sinister appointment of Margaret Spellings as the new president of the university. Margaret was appointed by a board of governors. I believe there are over 20, most of whom are Republican
In a secret meeting.
In a secret meeting, they appointed Margaret Spellings. There wasn't a search committee. They pushed out Tom Ross. So students and faculty met last night, and they're organizing an event on December 11th at 8 a.m. They're gathering 8 a.m. at the Friday Center for School Leadership and Development. They're asking both the community and the campus to rally. It is the Board of Governors meeting. They are going to protest the appointment of Margaret Spellings, whose official assignment doesn't begin until March 1st. So there's action to really demand that the Board of Governors that acted illegally in violation of their own rules in her appointment in secret. And they're going to ask for a rescission of that appointment and a new appointment with a properly transparent search committee.
Because even didn't the legislature set a rule that they were to have three finalists or and then all of a sudden they just ignored all of...
Well, what they do is they invite the universities to have, make recommendations, and then those recommendations are brought to the Board of Governors. But in addition to which, the Board of Governors, and Lori can talk to this, also tolerated about 12 of the, I don't know how many campuses, 19, 17 campuses, extraordinary salary raises as tuition is being increased, as faculty has not gotten raises, as adjuncts are being exploited, and they go ahead and give these phenomenal raises to principals. The legislature, oddly enough, held that up. So it's now hasn't gone through yet, but it's certainly in the offing. So I'll just close by giving a couple of information about the Friday, December 11th event. The Board of Ed meets at the Board of Governors meets at 9, but they're asking people to gather at 8 a.m. They're going to gather, they're going to rally, and then they're going to march into the Board of Governors
meeting.
And
that should help remember. It's going to be on a Friday, the 11th, at the Friday Center. So think of Friday.
Correct.
That's a little way to try to remember it.
Right, but for those of us who are familiar with the Friday Center, it's not in the main building. No. It's in the neighboring Center for School Leadership and Development, which is exactly what we need, really, public university support, school leadership, 140 Friday Center Drive, and you can park right near the building.
It's right down near Meadowmont, everybody, on the other side of the road,
right.
And it's very well marked.
And they really, students and faculty are looking for, and staff are looking for real community support. So if you're on your way to work, you can stop there, you can show them your support, and if possible, stay for the Board of Governors meeting. By the way, of course, secret session closed to the public. They went into closed session to implement the raises for 12 of the 17 UNC chancellors, which has been held up by the legislature.
Miriam, don't you think the timing of that's kind of funny? Because some of the chancellors were not happy about Margaret Spellings not having really very much in the way of any academic credentials. So all of a sudden, when they're starting to complain, they slap them with these huge raises.
Like a trade-off. I don't know how many of the chancellors
it was peculiar.
Yeah, sure.
Or questionable.
I think a few may have opposed. I'm not sure of the others, but I think it certainly is a payoff. The BOG has made attacks on academic freedom, as we know, including the closing of the Poverty and Opportunity Center, Jean Nickel, we know that, but they also closed the Center for Civic Engagement at Central. So they've gone ahead and really determined who's going to, be part of the important academic conversation. But Margaret Spellings has sat on the board. She was, by the way, the education czar under Bush.
Under Bush.
Right.
No Child Left Behind, one of that, such a popular program, right?
Well, that's a debatable program. I mean, it was built on testing.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
And it was very controversial.
And endorsed charter schools. She also has sat on the board of the parent company of the University of Phoenix. She's currently employed, get this one, of CNET, a student debt collection agency.
Oh, the collection agency.
A collection agency of student debt.
What is it called, CNET? How do you spell
it? CEANETTE. You can look it up. CEANETTE, a student debt collection agency.
Oh my God.
As, of course, we're driving students into debt with raised tuitions, which, of course, she's also sponsoring. Her record in education on both K-12 and higher education is not good for UNC. As the U.S. Department of Secretary of Education, I mentioned earlier, she was the architect of No Child Left Behind. She's a proponent of short-term metrics-focused, system performance-based funding. That means basing schools' funding, based on their test. And she is clearly in line with the privatization of our public education and higher education system. So she is a real danger to the UNC system. By the way, she has talked out against not against Islamophobia, but not dealing with Islamophobia. She is clearly not addressing the issues of racism, gender bias, and LGBTQ bias in the university. So the fact that the Board of Governors really appointed her in secret session is astounding, and they ought, and hopefully with our support, will be challenged again December 11th at 8 a.m. at the Center for School Leadership and Development, part of the Friday Center at 140 Friday Center Drive.
And was there another thing going on that same evening?
Ah, yes. Let me go back a step. This coming Thursday, for those who want to congratulate the new board members, Board of Education members that we fought so hard to get elected, they will be seated at 7 p.m.
Tomorrow, you mean Thursday?
Tomorrow, Thursday, 7 p.m. At Lincoln Center. I would urge you go on the Chapel Hill Carrboro School Board website to make sure that it's not a town hall, which they may have, because it may be a very large gathering, so it may be a Chapel Hill town hall, but check it out. You can go on the Chapel Hill Carrboro School Board.
So this is to kind of meet the new members.
Meet the new members. They will be seated. They'll be seated tomorrow. So that's Ronnie Dossi. That's Margaret Samuels. That's Annetta Streeter. Pat Heinrich are the new Annetta's an incumbent reelected, but Pat, Ronnie, and Margaret are new board members, and we have really high hopes that they're going to deal with the issue that, Wilf has been working on with the NAA Education Committee around the campaign for racial justice, racial equity in our schools. And then I'll give you one last wonderful announcement.
Well, thank goodness you came. You were going to make these announcements. We do a station break in the middle, but Mark has been delayed. So this makes a perfect time because we could play music. We're always ready to play music when we need to, when a guest is delayed, if we don't have anything particular to.
Let me just drop in here.
Yes, you may come in on this.
Listening to the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the wake-up call.
Yes, thank you, Dick.
And on 103.5 FM or streamed from the WCOM website, which is easy to remember, wcomfm.org. And our guest at the moment is Miriam Thompson of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom and many other organizations.
Many other organizations. And the one who's just talking is Dick Paddock, our co-host, and I'm Lori Hoyt. And Emily O'Hare is personing the video camera. So, okay, Miriam, you've bringing us wonderful information that I hope people are writing down and paying attention to.
We are on the evening of December 11th at 7 o'clock at Bull Plaza on Chapel Hill Street in Durham. Mm-hmm. We're Raise Up. We're Many Wolf members. We're at the recent Raise Up for 15 rally. It is the sixth night of Hanukkah, which precedes, of course, Christmas and Kwanzaa. And why that night is going to be an interfaith service, both to commemorate the sixth night of Hanukkah, but to really fight against the increasing wars, the refugee crisis, the rising racism and Islamophobia, and the many campaigns that Wilf has been involved in. So I urge everybody to come to Bull Plaza, come in the morning to
Friday Center. It's a Friday.
And then go home or go to work, eat, and come back at 7 o'clock to Durham at the Bull Plaza.
Oh, Miriam, thank you. That's wonderful information. And tomorrow night, for those of us who are particularly paying attention to the school board, and here is our dear friend and guest, Mark Dorison. Glad you could make it.
Good evening. I apologize for being late.
We were just talking about the student and faculty uprising against Margaret Spellings and the Board of Governors' closed session.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting things happening in the community. It's great to see the national student activism happening here right at UNC, and in many ways I think at the forefront of what's going on.
So Mark Dorison is managing attorney for the Center for Civil Rights at UNC, is that?
That's correct, yes.
Do I have that right?
You do.
I know Mark from many, many, many years ago, where for many years he was on the Carrboro Board of Aldermen, and that's where I got to know him and love him and admire him. And then you took a break and had a nifty bar. My daughter, Cookie, said, oh, I know Mark. I used to go into his bar sometimes, hell.
That's right.
And now you're with the county commissioners.
That's correct. Yeah,
it's in politics, and I'm so glad because we need you. We don't need good bars, but this is another way to serve the community.
That's a good pun too. Very good. Yeah. Yes, that serving the community theme is consistent.
Yes,
across
it is consistent.
So that I appreciate that. Well, you're very kind, Lori, as always, and too kind. And I am a huge fan of yours as well, and have been for a long time. And Miriam also. Being in a community where there are so many dynamic and dedicated activists it nourishes your soul. It's reaffirming, which I at least need. I seem to need more and more frequently because there's a lot of
the forces of evil are.
Yeah, they're amassing on the hill. It can be very discouraging.
It can be.
Nationally and statewide and even locally. And so I just was hearing today there was another mass shooting in California. And
and you had a lockdown. There was a lockdown here in Chapel Hill that there was supposed to be some gunmen. I heard by the ROTC building and that the Carrboro schools, I just heard the tail end. I don't know if anybody else heard anything about that, but
yeah,
it turned out that it may have been a mistake, but people are on edge these days.
Absolutely. These are sadly dangerous times, and it's the culture of fear is something that really can be manipulated against progressive change. And unfortunately, there are some genuinely dangerous things happening, and so it makes it easier for the fearmongers out there to manipulate good people. But hopefully, well, let's talk. We should talk about something more cheerful since we're all here together, and there are good things happening in the community.
Well, that's a, you know, I haven't talked to you in quite a while, and I think since you were running for election, maybe seeing you at some various things. But I really appreciate your coming and this opportunity for me and the community to catch up with what you're working on, both at the university and as a commissioner, and what you're seeing is issues that you're caring about right now, and to let us know, let us in on it.
Oh, I'd be happy to. There are lots of things going on at the at the county level, and from I'll start with the commissioning and then work out mm-hmm. from there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming to roughly to the end of my first term, and one of the goals I had going in was really to try to help change the conversation about how we talk about, you know, policies and practices of local government, and to really put what I think is our community's collective commitment to social justice and civil rights and inclusion, really put it in the forefront. You know, sort of talked about a lot generally, but to really try to focus in on that. And I think we've done a good job. I think we've changed the conversation, and I think those issues are really now even more than ever at the forefront of our discussions. And so we've seen progress on affordable housing, for example. We're going to have money in the upcoming bond. $5 million will be for affordable housing.
Oh, well, okay, great.
Which is exciting.
That is exciting.
We've made a lot of progress, not as fast as any of us would like, but we've made a lot of progress in making reparations to the Rogers Road community. So,
yes, and I think the commissioners have been really, as far as I know, really good about that. I think Encarbro's been pretty good. Chapel Hill's been really dragging its feet. I don't know if that's going to improve, but I've really been impressed with the commissioners.
Well, you know, they've got this, the community center is up and running, and
yes.
it's running at capacity. It's
absolutely wonderful.
If you spend any time up there, it is, again, to, you know, go back to what I said earlier, it is reaffirming, it's reassuring, and yeah. seeing the community has come together in that way, and the plans for getting the sewer in there are pushing forward, which
that's,
is exciting.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that is most exciting, you know, I started talking and others a lot about child poverty in Orange County, and which, given the wealth of our community, is a real scourge that it exists here. And so now we've got this program that's based out of the health department called the Family Success Alliance that is focusing on child poverty and, modeled after the Harlem Children's Zone program, which is sort of what they call the pipeline, you know, starting at birth and getting kids to graduation. And there's been a lot of really great work. It's a big community effort, and there's one area of focus is up there in the county near New Hope Elementary. Another area of focus is here in the north side and surrounding community in Carrboro. And there's just some great work being done.
So
there.
How does it work?
Well, it works that there are a range of different community nonprofits, community groups, the school systems, county agencies, all working together to address a range of issues mm-hmm. confronting families, low-wealth families with young children. And so one of the things, one of the big successes that has happened is this summer we started a pre-kindergarten program, to a kindergarten readiness program for low-wealth families with children who might not have been able to get into access to daycare or preschool. And it was a summer program to bring kids who were coming into kindergarten, get them engaged with the schools. It was very successful, and then we're gonna continue to work with those kids as they get into school, and then we'll have a second cohort of kids behind them. And the idea is to follow them and their families and providing, the whole range of wraparound services.
Oh, that's wonderful. I had not heard about that. That is really exciting.
Well,
because every time you read that statistic about how many kids are going hungry, how many kids in this state, and you're right, and this is a wealthy community, it makes it all the more upsetting that, yeah.
Can I just interject for a minute and have Mark talk about the context in which the county has to operate, which is the state has pulled back on pre-K, the state has pulled back on funding for the schools, the state has pulled back on affordable, all the stuff that, and in addition, if you can talk to it, they've tried to curtail the power of counties and municipalities to really hold, you know, dominion.
They're trying to keep
all
the control, yeah.
Well, that's exactly right, Miriam. One of the things, just before I forget, before I turn to Miriam's point, one of the other key things about, you know, these early childhood services and the Family Success Alliance that's so important is we know that those getting services into those families in need early on, before kids get to school, mm-hmm. is one of the best ways of minimizing the achievement gap that we see mm-hmm. happening. And so in studies that have been done, when you compare kids who have had, you know, pre-K services or Head Start or Smart Start and kids who haven't, the achievement gap by third grade is substantially different mm-hmm. for those who have and those who haven't.
And that makes such sense, you know,
that
if so many kids are getting that Head Start and then you come in and you're already behind, and then that's discouraging. And you start getting a label. So, I mean, it makes such common sense, but it's so hard to get people to realize that and put the funding into it. And I'm glad we are.
It's exciting, and I'm only sorry that you haven't heard about it already, because that means we're not doing a good enough job promoting it. But as to Miriam's point, I think that, again, none of the stuff we're trying to do in the county happens in a vacuum. We are in a time where the state legislature has, you know, really rolled back, not just rolled back, but really taken away any support, really undercut programs designed to help the folks most in need. And so that includes pre-K programs and programs that have been proven to work, you know, pre-K programs, funding for, teacher training programs, for teacher assistance, the kind of support that schools need. My daughter, I have a 16-year-old daughter. She wants to be a teacher. And she says, I don't want to be a teacher in North Carolina. We looked up on the computer, best states for teachers, and North Carolina, 51. They include D.C. So North Carolina last. So
we've gone down that low.
Yeah.
I knew we were sliding. That's
so
terrible.
On the one hand, we talk a lot about the importance of education and the value that it has. And then, you know, what we see from the legislature is the complete inversion of that, you know, a deprioritizing, a devaluating, and really even just an attack, you know, an open attack on teachers and on the kind of other progressive issues that make the most impact. So in the county, we've had to make up for money that was taken away by the legislature. We've tried to make sure that the schools get all the resources they need. But the state has also, and the state, as you said, has put handcuffs on local governments, you know, from everything from going back a couple of years ago when they eliminated the ability to have local gun regulations to most recently this whole sanctuary cities program where the places like Carrboro and Chapel Hill have really been excoriated by the legislature for being places that are safe, secure, and welcoming to immigrants.
Don't you appreciate the hypocrisy where they keep saying they don't like a lot of government, you know, the conservatives, the less government, the better. And yet here in this state, the conservatives are doing everything to take away any kind of local control and keep it consolidated, very controlled by the state, by the central power. And every time that I think of that, it just makes it worse.
Do you remember the play Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams?
Yes.
You know, and there's a character named Big Daddy, and he talks about, you know, mendacity, the power odor of mendacity. And I think that could be the slogan for the state these days.
That's perfect. Yeah, it is.
So I you asked also about, I want to put in a few plugs for the Center for Civil Rights, which myself and my colleagues, Elizabeth Haddix, Jennifer Marsh, Ted Shaw, Brent Ducharme, are doing some really exciting work trying to keep the vision of our founder, Julius Chambers, moving forward, vision of equal treatment, equality, diversity. And we have a big case in litigation right now in Halifax County, North Carolina, which is in off 95 as you're going up to Virginia. It's one of the poorest counties in the state. And in Halifax, they have three school districts that serve 7,000 kids altogether. So three school districts for 7,000 kids. Two of the districts are almost all African American. One of the districts is majority white. The schools there are low performing. The predominantly African American schools have been for a long time some of the lowest performing schools in the state. The predominantly white district is a mediocre district. It only looks better by comparison to the other two. And yet the county continues to maintain this these racially segregated and inequitably funded districts. And so we are representing a group of parents and a community organization and the local branch of the NAACP in a lawsuit to try to ensure that every student there gets their constitutional right to a sound basic education, which is part of the North Carolina Constitution. So that's an exciting bit of litigation that's going on. We've also been, over the past 2 years, been representing victims of the state's forced sterilization program, the state's eugenics program, which is a horrific chapter in our state's history. North Carolina had a forced sterilization program by which people who were deemed unfit to procreate because of either because they were poor or because they were disabled or because they were quote-unquote promiscuous, were forcibly sterilized.
And the shock of that program, when I first heard about it, horrible things did happen in the 30s and whatever. But that went right up into the 70s, and that's the real shocker.
That's right. North Carolina had the longest-running program mm-hmm. in the country. After the horrors of the Third Reich were exposed,
yes.
Most states abandoned those. In North Carolina, not only did it continue, but starting in the 50s and 60s, it really began to be a program targeted at African American women primarily.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2013, the state created a restitution program, a compensation program for victims. And at the center, we spent a lot of time doing community outreach, helping folks file those claims, helping make sure that they were able to get the restitution they were entitled to. And most recently, we've been representing some victims and victims' families who were denied compensation under the act. And so we've been appealing those, and we're just at the Court of Appeals on Monday.
We have to take a station break because we need to tell everybody what they're listening to, which is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, our wake-up call. And our guest today is Mark Dorison, who's a county commissioner and
a civil rights lawyer. You can just say
A civil rights lawyer.
Okay.
Yeah. At the Center for Civil Rights.
And we are reaching you on WCOM, LP, Chapel Hill, and Carrboro, 103.5 FM, or streamed from the station's website, which is wcomfm.org. And just a little announcement to remind you that if you hang on after 6 o'clock comes around, you'll be able to listen to Chris Fitzsimon of the North Carolina Policy Watch as he brings you his weekly news and views. I think that's about all we have.
I think that's about it,
Unless you want to give a quick rundown of your announcements.
Miriam opened the program while we're waiting for Mark with some announcements of some things happening on campus. So we'll do a quick run through.
Yeah, just quickly on
Friday.
On December 11th at 8 o'clock in the morning at the Friday Center at the Center for School Leadership and Development, 140 Friday Center Drive. Students, faculty, and community will be gathering at the Board of Governors meeting to protest the outrageous appointment done in closed session of Margaret Spellings. And so they're protesting the board's action. They're asking that a new chancellor be chosen, that she not be put into office effective March 1st. She is a notorious privatization person. She also, as I mentioned earlier, runs something called CANETTE. You can look it up, CAENETTE, a student debt collection agency. So they're alleging, and she certainly will not be in support of one of our most important institutions like the Center for Civil Rights. She will not be supporting the increased protests against racism and Islamophobia. She will not be in support of the actions against gender bias and LGBTQ. And
I guess it's to her advantage to raise the student debt.
She will raise the tuition so she can collect more debt because she sits on the board.
Yes, so hits me right at home with all these grandkids with a huge debt. So,
but this is really part of a long-term campaign. So we're looking forward to joining them and urge the community to start by being there on Friday. But stay tuned. We'll have continued announcements of what further campaign organizing is going forward.
Thank you for bringing
And by the way, I wanted to thank Mark when you mentioned Rogers Road because it speaks to the other issues. The issue of reparations. This was over a 40-year struggle of really racist attack on the Rogers Road community. And so to call it reparations, I think, speaks not only for Mark's history and, you know, his posture as an incredible civil rights attorney and activist, but that is what it was. It was reparations long overdue.
Long overdue. So here we are, Mark. A lot going on. And that's what you said. It started off saying about how you like being in a community where there was a lot of progressive ferment and inspiration, and we kind of inspire each other to keep going when there's so much that is discouraging, that the temptation is to stay home and pull the covers over your head. And so we all kind of help each other realize we're not alone. And that's what's so important in activism, to realize that you are not alone, that you have compadres, that you have friends, you have activists out there with you fighting the good fight.
I think that's exactly right, Lori. And I think that, you know, if there's any silver lining to sort of the regressive policies that have come into the fore in North Carolina, is that it has really helped unite liberals and progressives and get us out of our silos. Really, it has helped, and I think Reverend Barber and the NAACP has been really instrumental in creating that kind of fusion and highlighting how all these things are connected, which has been so important.
He's been wonderful with that. There were people that I think never thought they'd be on a marching in protest. When there's doctors in their white coats and ministers and such a variety of diversity with race, with age, you know, from babies to old people with their walkers. I mean, it's just been so inspiring. And just to know that I guess when we're all comfortable enough, it's easy to think, things are not that bad. But that's one favor that this regressive government has done. It's made us realize that, you can't rest and say things are not so bad. They're so bad that even people who never thought they'd be out there are out there.
And I think it really helps highlight for a lot of folks the macro picture of the forces, aligned against civil rights and social justice, mm-hmm. that it isn't just, individuals who are being injured, but that what we're up against is an institutionalized discrimination. And so, taking that on requires us to take that kind of, you know, sweeping macro approach. And I think it's important that we do that. And in this community in particular, which I for a long time has sort of prided itself on being, you know, progressive and forward thinking, and has been, but to really start to put that into practice, and how do we effectuate that? So, you know, that's why like the issue of child poverty has been such a, I think such a poignant one for the community, because, and I've said this before in places, you know, if we can't address it here in this county with the resources we have, and I don't just mean the fiscal resources, which are immense, but with the intellectual, with the spiritual, with the, you know, the academic, the political resources that we have. If we can't address these most pressing problems here, it can't be because we're not able to. It has to be because we don't want to. And I don't believe that's the case.
Yeah.
But we have to put ourselves and each other really to our paces.
Boy, you really put that so well. I really hadn't thought of it that way, but you're right. With all this living in such a rich community, if not here, where?
Right, exactly.
If not now, when? I think I'm quoting somebody, but it really is so. I mean, so if we could be a model, then other less well-to-do communities might take hold too and say, you know, they could do it. We're not that poor here. We could try to do it too.
That's right. And certainly, you know, if there are, you know, if there's, you know, if there's a place where there's where innovation is possible, where it can be tried, where there's this kind of creativity, where there's this kind of energy, it's here. And it can be a model. I think you're exactly right. I mean, what we know, the answer isn't always just you need more money. I mean, that we do, but that's not always the answer.
No.
And sometimes it's how you use it and how you use the resources that you have. So I'm hopeful. And at the same time, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say that local government moves slowly. You know, the it's a big hill we're trying to push the rock up, but we've got to keep pushing it.
Yeah, so you said something earlier on, which I didn't realize, that you were coming towards the end of your first term.
Well, I got elected in 2012, so my term will go to December of 2016, so next year. But they moved the elections up, so the filing period opened yesterday. I filed for re-election.
Oh, good.
And the primary is going to be on March 15th, so the Ides of March. Hopefully I will fare better than Julius Caesar did. But I'm going to use that in my campaign.
Yes.
Beware the Ides of March, right? So crazily, we just had an election less than a month ago, and now people are having to talk about the next election, which is going to come up. You know, again, the leadership of the legislature decided they wanted North Carolina to play a bigger role in national politics. So they pushed the primary up 2 months.
Boy, it's
right.
Been pushed up.
That's right. They were going to have two primaries, one for everybody else and one for the president. And somebody figured out that would cost extra millions and millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So they didn't want to give up that early presidential primary. So now everybody will be running running on the Ides of March.
You will run again.
I'm in. I went up there yesterday. I paid my $214, and you know, I will tell people, if you ever hear me say the words "I'm running," it either means I'm being chased or I'm up for re-election. So in this case, it's the latter. So.
Well, I hope anybody listening just know that this is a really good guy, so pay attention.
You are too kind.
Yeah.
I have to say, it's especially nice being here, not only to be with all of you Wilfers, but, you know, this radio station, and I ordinarily don't like to toot my own horn because I'm Jewish and neurotic and shy, but when I was on the Carborough Board of Aldermen back in the, you know, early 2000s was when the FCC opened up the rules for low-power radio, FM radio. And I had suggested the town create a radio station. And ultimately, by the time it went into play, I was all long gone from the board. But here it is.
Here
I have some you know, I have some legacy. Pride of ownership.
Ownership. Yeah.
Yes, so I have as
a visionary.
I have some rights of memory in this kingdom.
As, yeah,
to quote Shakespeare.
Yeah, because I think the station has just celebrated its 10th year. We're celebrating our 10th year.
It's exciting.
It is
great.
Exciting. Yeah, it is great.
And it's doing what I think exactly what folks had hoped it would do. It is a really community. Based, community-run, community-owned, and community resource radio station.
There's so many different kinds of programs. If you ever, because I try to tune in since I'm part of the station, and I really try to pay attention. There's a whole thing about solar power and sustainable power one morning, and then there's a whole book club thing. I just heard my friend Nancy Peacock being interviewed. I mean, there's all kinds of music programs from, you know, it's just wonderful. Miriam, you want to get your 2 cents worth?
Yeah, I just wanted Mark to talk about something else, especially when you're talking about poverty and increasing
yes.
low-wealth communities, that in addition to the affordable housing, which you indicated, which I think we're pushing for in Chapel Hill and Carborough and so on, but certainly on the county level, if you could also talk about economic development and the role of the county, and I think they really were ahead of even some of the municipalities in assuring a livable wage to their employees. So if you could talk to that, because really moving economic development so that people can afford to live here, stay here, and have decent paying jobs to support their families.
Yes, thank you for reminding me about that. There's so much going on, but again, thinking holistically about the challenges of poverty and the needs of our community, you know, we talk about education, we talk about housing, certainly jobs and economic opportunity is a critical component of that. And so the county has for a long time, before I got there, you know, certainly been pushing the living wage, that anybody working for the county should be making a living wage. And we've more recently been encouraging other local governments to do that, as well as sort of the quasi-public entities. OWASA is doing that, and I was gratified that the Orange County ABC Commission is going to be moving to having a living wage for all of its employees. The school systems are working on that, which is exciting, and we've been more recently been looking at how we can ensure a living wage for entities that we have to contract with. So that has been a critical aspect of the county. And again, it goes to the point we were talking about earlier about, you know, being the leader and living up to our stated progressive values. And so and then there's a living wage organization that's been formed, Mark Markopoulos and other folks have put together, where they're going around and identifying businesses that pay a living wage and giving them recognition and acknowledgement. So, you know, in the private sector, so we can, again, support that idea about making sure that folks are able to live here and stay here and work here and be a part of the community. Because I think for a long time, many of our public workers, we know, couldn't afford to live in Chapel Hill or Carborough or even Orange County. And certainly that's also true for the, you know, many of the university workers and the hospital workers. So, again, trying to keep these issues in the forefront when we're talking about any existing policies or when we're talking about making new ones is something that I'm very proud that the commissioners have been doing and all of our elected bodies are doing and now really being able to put that into practice. Like I said, I think the conversation has changed in a substantive way. And now what we need to do is take the next step and really change the way we do things to reflect that.
Yeah, and I think that idea you're saying of Mark Markopoulos of giving recognition to the businesses that do. There was just a letter to the editor in the paper today mentioning Autologic, that they have a long history of paying a living wage with benefits, et cetera. So I think so people know if they think, oh, you're charging a little bit more than the other guy, that they're paying their workers well, then you feel better about it. You know, I think that's in some way there should be like an honor roll periodically in the paper of businesses that are signing on to that. You know, would be a good idea.
Well, I think that's what the project is doing. This living wage project is having that honor roll. It's online, and
right.
The businesses get a certificate,
and
so it is about, you know, recognizing them and encouraging folks who value
yeah.
that kind of commitment to support those businesses and business owners.
And I think you said the schools are working on it, so they're not quite there yet.
Well, the schools, I think, are there, except, you know, there are some positions at the Chapel Hill Carborough School that were kind of custodial positions and some lower lower paid work positions that were contracted out. And so there's no guarantee that those workers earn a living wage. I don't think they do. I don't know what they earn specifically. But, you know, I would be interested in seeing the school try to bring those folks back in-house so they do get a living wage,
yeah.
benefits, retirement.
And also, if you're going to contract out, to not let anybody contract with you unless they're going to pay a living wage. That would be a way also, you know, that to make that a rule for all the...
Well, that's where you run into some of the limitations from the state government that Miriam talked about earlier. There are certain rules about... contracting rules about having to accept bids and the lowest bid, and so it is not always, you know, we don't always have the ability to do that, and so the state has hemmed us in a bit on that. But there are other things that can be done, and mm-hmm. you know, the county's has been trying to look creatively at that. I know other communities, some other communities around the state have been looking at that, and I think we're finding the path. Our lawyer has been working very diligently to find a way where we can stay in compliance with state law, but
yeah.
also promote those values.
One idea would be to bring them back in-house.
Right, that's certainly one possibility.
And just like the big fight on campus right now about the bookstore.
Exactly.
You know, that they want to privatize that, and who knows how people will be paid. And there's a great protest about that, and I was so glad because, you know, the bookstore is such a traditional place, and it's such a wonderful place. And to think that they're going to – and from everything people have been writing in, this company that they want to privatize to is not that good, that they have a pretty bad record.
Well, you know
– on many aspects.
I'm sure you know that North Carolina has long had a reputation as being a right-to-work state. You know, mm-hmm. one of its attractions for business was low-paid workers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is a state where private employees have very, very few employment protections. So mm-hmm. working some of the only workers who have employment protections, other than the very broad sort of federal civil rights protections, are public employees who work for county, work for the cities, who work for the state. And so, you know, anytime you're contracting out any of those positions, not only are you have all the issues that you raised about the quality of service and the things like that, but you also are eliminating that sector of employees from protections that they
yes.
would otherwise get. And
yes.
so. That is particularly troubling as a civil rights lawyer and advocate for workers, as well as just a person concerned about equal treatment.
Yeah,
we also talked earlier, and I'm glad Lori mentioned they don't have to contract out. I mean, the custodial workers were in-house.
Yeah.
They have now contracted out many of them. And by the way, many of the schools closed. Carborough Elementary, I want to say, that did not contract out but has its custodial staff. It happened. It was one of the only schools that could have opened had they kept the schools open. But I think that's really an important point. And I just wanted to reference the earlier announcement we made that tomorrow at 7 p.m., I think either at Town Hall or Lincoln Center. I told people to look at the Chapel Carborough School Board calendar. But we will be seating new candidates to the school board. And I think the treatment of workers could certainly
be.
You know, children look at how people are treated in
yes.
the schools. And if they're treated with disdain or if they're not treated fairly, the kids get it. It's part of their, you know, it should be part of their youth leadership training that we act like role models in paying the teachers properly, which we're not paying the TAs properly, which we're not. In fact, we're cutting them. So I think tomorrow that it'll be interesting to see how the new school board really takes on some of these important issues.
And to let them know that this is something we, the community, care
right.
about. So how are we doing, Dick?
We've got 4 minutes left.
Okay. And wrapping up, is there some way that people can get in touch with you, like either by email or?
Sure. Well, people can email me at markdorison@gmail.com.
Okay.
They can email me at the county. I have a county email address. I think it's mdorison@orangecountync.gov.
Uh-huh.
I can look at my phone and see what that. I never email myself, so I don't remember.
That sounds good.
At
Orange.
And
so there's a couple of different ways. And if you just remember Mark Dorison, D-O-R-O-S-I-N.
That's right.
Just know how to spell it.
That's right.
Mark with a K.
Correct.
M-A-R-K. So that's pretty easy to remember. And so I encourage you to get in touch with Mark if you have any questions or want to put your 2 cents worth in about county government or about civil rights in this state, which is a big issue that will take continual work. And so, yeah, you're in a good field. You're not going to run out of work to do, Mark.
No, I would, you know, I work with a lot of young lawyers and law students, and I tell them, you know, civil rights is a growth industry in North Carolina. Unfortunately. I would very much like to be out of work,
yeah,
but sadly, yes,
yeah.
I would love to be the Maytag repairman of civil rights, but that doesn't seem to be happening anytime soon.
Yeah. Which means we all should be supporting the Center for Civil Rights and the remarkable work they do.
Yes, we certainly should, and if we hear any rumors about any problems, defunding or whatever, we should be out there, just like we're going to be out there on Friday the 11th at the Friday Center at 8 o'clock in the morning. I got that in, Miriam.
Just keep. She's good. She's good.
I believe in the Chinese water torture. Just keep repeating it.
Three times. You have to say everything three times before anybody remembers.
That's what they say.
Well, I appreciate you putting in a nice plug for the Center for Civil Rights, too. You know, we do not get any state funding, so we're dependent on the foundations and grants and the goodwill of folks who are interested in supporting the struggle against racism and discrimination. So if you're looking for a holiday gift to make, you can find the Center for Civil Rights on the web, and there's a you can make a delightful tax deductible donation to
continue the work. You're not dependent on state funding the way the state is right now. Thank goodness. You know, may those foundations keep up their good work.
Let's hope.
We'll have to get in touch with Mark Zuckerberg.
He's that's right.
He's got what $45 billion. He's looking for good causes.
I can certainly use of that.
There we go.
Yeah, we'll have to write him a letter and say
we will write him a letter.
He wants to make the world a better place, which is so sweet. They have this baby, and they, you know. So yes, so the Center for Civil Rights, we are staunch supporters. UNC Chapel Hill, yeah.
Well, it's interesting. North Carolina, I really believe is, you know, the eye of the storm. I mean, leading edge of the civil rights struggle is happening right here in this state, you know, whether it's voting rights, whether it's school resegregation, whether it's the treatment of prisoners, the treatment of low wealth individuals related to a whole host of issues. North Carolina has become ground zero for the fight. And so we are on the national spotlight as a result.
So we're blessed in that way to live here. We got 15 seconds. Okay. I want to thank our guest, Mark Dorison. I want to thank Miriam Thompson. And this is Lori Hoyt with Dick Paddock hosting Wilf's Wake Up.